Thank you. Well, good morning, everyone. Today I'm going to deal not with curriculum content or pedagogy. I'm going instead to deal with the underlying basic question of these 2 days, which is why history matters, and in particular, why the past matters. And I'd ask you to sort of bear in mind that this paper largely arises out of some very deep-seated anger and frustration that I still feel from 3 years ago, when in 2004 I spent 6 months campaigning to try to stop the AQA exam board abolishing its GCSE archaeology qualification. A campaign that failed totally, largely because I could persuade no one in power that archaeology actually mattered in any way, shape or form. You will get a perspective which is that from the CBA. You'll also get a perspective which is a very personal one from an archaeologist, just to prove I do actually get my hands dirty from time to time. Although not as part of my job, this is in my holidays. There are, of course, lots of differences between archaeology and history. We deal with different subject matters. Although we both originated in the ancient world, we have developed in parallel and slightly separately ever since. What I think that archaeology has to offer as a perspective is basically 3 things. Firstly, the archaeological profession is based overwhelmingly in what you might call publicly responsible institutions. We work in museums, in universities. Much more so, 80% of archaeologists work in either national heritage services or local authority heritage services, or in the field units, most of whom are charitable trusts and have public responsibilities as part of their constitutions. Because of that, because most archaeologists work in national agencies or local authorities or the field units, we have a link with the heritage world and heritage management. The conservation of sites. The ethos of conservation which makes us into heritage managers. Whether it's Stonehenge or whether it's Victorian terraced housing. It's all the same to an archaeologist. The historic environment is something which is there to be conserved and to be preserved for the public. And it stands in the public domain. You cannot put into a cardboard box the historic environment and put it into an archive or a museum store. It is very, very publicly visible. And the third thing I think that we've got is that archaeology has a very important voluntary sector. We have a large number of amateur archaeologists who are very active in researching the historic environment. And if the whole historic environment is our subject of study, we have no hope of studying it without the intervention and help of the voluntary sector. So, for example, from 1995 to 2002, the CBA ran a project called the Defence of Britain Project, where 600 volunteers up and down the country mapped, inventoried, described, planned, photographed something like 20,000 remains of anti-invasion defences of the 20th century in Britain. This ran in parallel with a separately funded project which looked at the evidence in the National Archives, the paper archives, paper documents, paper evidence for these defences. No surprise to find that what was actually built on the ground wasn't always the same as what should have been built according to the paper documentation. Some very interesting differences cropped up. But without that army of volunteers, that project would have been absolutely impossible to do. We have, therefore, within archaeology, a very small professional base. There are only 6,000 employed archaeologists in the country, supporting a much larger number of active amateur voluntary sector archaeological researchers. Unfortunately, that professional base is under funding threat every single year. There are plans by a local authority to abolish its archaeology services somewhere in the country. Most archaeologists received with a groan of disbelief that we had won the 2012 Olympics knowing full well that in DCMS, money will be siphoned off from Heritage to the Olympics over the next 5 years. We are under threat, we feel under threat. And in true historical fashion, I will underline that by going backwards in history, back to 1944. The year the CBA was founded, one of its first acts was to set up an Archaeology and Education Committee, which produced a report. It may be urged that unless a larger section of the British public is brought to take an intelligent interest in archaeology, our science will continue to be handicapped by ignorance, apathy, and obstructionism in the post-war world, and to find difficulty in obtaining state or other financial assistance for research. It is therefore of the utmost importance to the Council to promote archaeological studies in general education. This then, if you like, is the self-interested reason why archaeologists are so keen to have archaeology within the education system and to engage with education. However, if we're to persuade the powers that be that archaeology matters, we have to come up with more than just a self-interested justification. And it's interesting that over the last few years, we have seen a plethora of papers coming out which have sought to establish the value and utility of the past, to persuade our political masters that it is worth supporting. English Heritage published The Power of Place in the year 2000, which argued, amongst other things, for that conservation should be put at the heart of renewal and regeneration in cities, that the historic environment should be placed at the heart of education, and that more people should be enabled to participate in activities relating to the historic environment. The response came from DCMS in a publication called A Force for Our Future, which included amongst its 54 recommendations that there should be increased funding for the English Heritage Education Service, for example. Since then, we've seen a lot more in the way of reports coming through. The importance of the Power of Place document was that it linked very clearly the notion of heritage to place, to location, to places where people lived, and the depth of time which underlies local identities. This has been extended. A document produced by the CBA, which had amongst its particular points that it wanted to make, that archaeology made a core contribution to local identity and a sense of who we are, that the sense of place provided a common cultural perspective that allowed people to relate to each other, that archaeology and heritage made a major contribution to tourist income and heritage-led regeneration. We've seen Heritage Link, an organisation that comprises a lot of about 80 different bodies in the heritage sector, produce their Heritage Dynamo, produce Valuing Our Heritage, and we've seen the National Trust produce a very interesting report on how you can go about demonstrating that the past has public value. Just a few points from some of these publications. HMS Trincomalee, an 1817 warship that is still afloat, is moored in Hartlepool and has been the focus for regenerating Hartlepool Centre through tourism, through 350,000 visitors every year, bringing money into the town. Heritage railways, those enthusiasts who like to play with steam trains, they attract up to 9 million visitors to their localities every year. That's 9 million people who spend money in restaurants, in pubs, in cafes, gift shops, etc. People care deeply about heritage. There are something like 400,000 volunteers in the heritage field. 850 local civic societies, about 250 archaeology societies, about 200 metal detecting clubs, etc. Cathedrals, great heritage sites still in use, generate £150 million to their local economy every year. The Heritage Lottery Fund has been responding to the needs of local people and helping local people regenerate over 10,000 buildings over the last sort of 10 years. Heritage is popular. People like it. A Mori poll in 2004 showed, absolutely marvellous, 94% of people thought it was important that children should be taught about heritage, about the past. We have a lot of supporters out there willing us and helping us on our way. Being able to mount a coherent intellectual case is only part of the battle. Of course, we can also demonstrate that doing archaeology, doing heritage in some way, is fun. This is National Archaeology Week, and there are families here together, families, doing archaeological research on the foreshore of the Thames in London. And of course, National Archaeology Week allows you to get your hands dirty, and it really is fun and exciting and interesting. But of course, this won't really change people's minds unless we have high-level help. We're fortunate in having an all-party parliamentary archaeology group made up of lords and MPs, people who can ask questions in Parliament on our behalf, people who can enable meetings with ministers on our behalf. Lord Reedsdale got me a meeting with a junior education minister in my campaign about GCSE archaeology. It did no good, but at least I had the channel there to be able to get access to ministers. So, we need the public for our professional funding. We owe it to the public that is hungry for the heritage that we can serve. We can claim that heritage is a force for the common good. And we can call on friends in Parliament. We, as a profession, the archaeologists, have come to the point where we now have a greater realisation of what the value is of what we do for society as a whole. We can no longer say that we just study the past for its own sake, nor that conserving the past is an end in itself. And the point I want to make is that in having to justify ourselves over the last few years, we have come to challenge and change our own mindsets about what we do and why we do it, which has been incredibly valuable. The effect of all this can be seen very widely now within archaeology. There are more and more community archaeology posts within the profession supporting local groups, local people doing it for themselves. Providing equipment, providing skills, providing training, providing knowledge, providing links with professional units. There is a community archaeologist who works as a freelancer. He makes his living. He supports 14 different local history, heritage and archaeology groups in North Yorkshire, for example. And there are others up and down the country. Often cited as one of the biggest examples of community outreach is the Portal Antiquities scheme, whereby a team of finds liaison officers in every county in England and Wales liaise with the public who find things. About two-thirds of the finders who come into the Portal Antiquity Scheme are metal detectorists. Why is that important? Because 47% of the people who find things and come to the Portal Antiquity Scheme come from socio-economic groups C, 2, D and E. Only 29% of the growth those groups would ever think of visiting a museum. We're reaching out to wider sectors of the population by engaging with the metal detecting sector. And not just Portal Antiquity Scheme, but other bodies as well. Too many to mention, although I will mention here, English Heritage have an excellent outreach service with outreach officers in all the English regions who do work with community groups and marginalised groups and various other aspects of the public that demand our services. The benefit of all this activity for us, this demonstrating this advocacy, these policy papers, and actually doing it on the ground and getting numbers involved in doing it, is that it gives us a higher profile as a profession. And I think that's reflected in the fact that both English Heritage and the Council for British Archaeology through Heritage Link have been heavily involved in the Engaging Places initiative, for example, being run by the Department for Culture, Media and Support, which seeks to improve the use of the built environment by schools as an educational resource, both the contemporary and the historic built environment. And that project is only just beginning now. It's also perhaps reflected in the fact that within the moves towards changing the 14 to 19 curriculum, we now have a GCSE history being piloted by OCR as a new way of doing history, with large elements of archaeology and heritage management within it, to give a totally new take on what history could be at 14 to 16. And that pilot is beginning this year and carries for 2 years. Where archaeology has been less successful is in engaging intellectually with current issues of concern to society. And here I'm always very critical of my own discipline here. For example, one of the big challenges for us and our children and grandchildren is climate change, global warming. Archaeologists have a unique sort of perspective on this through our environmental studies, through our looking at boring things like columns through the peat in peat bogs, where we can reconstruct past climates. We have a thousands of year perspective on climate change that gives us a different perspective to people who don't have that depth of understanding of how the environment and climate has changed over time. Archaeologists have an understanding of 6,000 years of farming history in this country. We can look at different farming practices from the Neolithic, from the Bronze Age, Iron Age, Roman, medieval periods, and so on. We can understand how human activity has degraded or affected local environments, soils, etc. We can contribute to the debate about what sustainable farming really means in terms of what we're doing to our landscape. And although archaeologists no longer believe in simplistic equations of cultures with peoples, the archaeological debate about identity and what material culture means in terms of being reflected in ethnic identities or not has a great deal to contribute towards debates about immigration and multiculturalism. And yet, where are the archaeologists speaking out in current debates and political issues? We keep ourselves tightly hidden within the walls of academia. The past has relevance. And I would suggest that history, just as much as archaeology, has that direct relevance. For those of you who don't speak Latin, let me translate. Magna Carta, chapter 39. No freeman shall be taken and imprisoned, or deceased, or outlawed, or exiled, or in any way harmed, nor will we go upon him, nor send upon him, except by lawful judgment of his peers and by the law of the land. I would suggest that Magna Carta chapter 39 is just as relevant now as it was in the 13th century. How damning then that looking at pupils' perceptions of history and why two-thirds of pupils don't take history at 14 plus, we receive statements like this. Many pupils were unable to give reasons for studying history. Pupils either did not feel history was relevant or were unable to articulate why it might be useful. Isn't that a damning comment on us all? If after so many years of teaching, they fail to understand why we're doing what we're doing and why the past is important. But I'm not saying that to attack historians. Archaeologists are just as guilty of this as anyone else. I would suggest that history has fallen between the two stools, both afraid to engage intellectually, because it's academically not supposed to be rigorous, in personal, subjective and emotive narrative, and yet unwilling to overtly engage with and challenge our political masters. And that the postmodernist attitudes that now infect history effectively prop up these two stools where history falls in between. There's been a loss of nerve, I can't help feeling, amongst our joint profession. So my three sort of concluding points, really, for advice. Advice, feel free to ignore, you don't have to follow what I've got. Be relevant. The past does matter. I've given you some examples. You've heard examples from other speakers already about why the past does matter. Be overt about it, that it does matter. Tap into the public demand for what is out there. The public flock in their tens of thousands to family origins, to the sense of place, to the fun and enjoyment to be had from doing local, personal, family, location, locality, history, etc. That gives you a huge, huge strength that I can't help but feel is not being made enough of within the curriculum in schools. And what about getting a more active engagement with people who are interested in history? How about doing something fun and exciting and different? The past doesn't stop now, it carries on into the future. Today is tomorrow's past. Why not get people and pupils to curate their own present in order to leave a present for the future? To create their own archives about their own lives, to choose for themselves what they want future generations to know about them. That would be an immense, interesting and exciting way of getting across the value of looking back at the past, I can't help feeling. Let me just finish up with a quotation from Sir Mortimer Wheeler, a 20th century archaeologist of great standing and stature, who provides me with endless inspiration. He wrote in 1954, year after year, individual after individual, learned society after learned society, we are prosaically revealing and cataloguing our discoveries. Too often we dig up mere things, unrepentantly forgetful that our proper aim is to dig up people. And he went on to say that the true job of the archaeologist is to link sentient mind today with a sentient mind in the past across the ages. Linking people together, people now with people in the past. If I can extend that, history matters because it puts flesh on the bones of archaeology, but also because it is fundamentally about people. Without the past, people are adrift and they can't make connections with each other. History provides us with the glue by which we articulate our relationships person to person, people to people. I hope there are a few things there which may cause you to think. I hope that there are a few things there which might be useful. And I hope we can have some discussion in the breakout groups based on some of what all of us have been saying this morning. Thank you.